Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Good morning. This is the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We're live here in the Kia Studios. Mike, Bo, and Tiff here hanging out with you on another rainy, rainy day.
Tiff, are you okay?
Yeah.
Okay. That sounded very downtrodden.
It did.
Yeah.
Do you want me to try again?
No. Let's talk this out. Does the rain have you downtrodden this morning?
It does not. It has me wanting to crawl back in bed, as I'm sure a lot of people feel the same way.
Yeah, the vibes are out there like that for sure.
It's a good stay at home. Nobody was on the roads. I'm sure a bunch of people called out sick today.
Think so.
I wish my commute was the same as yours then, because all I had was dum-dums trying to either speed up in the rain when I'm going by at a comfortable speed or sit in the fast lane and do like 55. And look, I get it. You need to be safe driving in the rain. I am I have seen wrecks in the rain from people that can't handle the wet roads at the speeds they're trying to drive. And I've been a part of one. My dumb friend on spring break back in 2002. Shout out to Sloan. I'm gonna say something. When you're going, like, when you're in the interstate at like 20 something years old or 19 years old, and you're in a Honda Civic, yeah.
and you don't even know it's raining,
and your buddy goes, "Man, we're making great time," and the next thing you know, you're facing oncoming traffic.
Yeah, no,
you're like, "Oh crap!"
Yeah, no thanks.
But there's no reason to be in the far left lane if you do not want to go at least the speed limit, whether it's raining or not. Just safely get over for the rest of us. Also, if I've gone past you and I'm trying to get over, don't decide you're going to speed up and cut me off with one headlight. Dude with a bicycle in the back of your car on 575.
You tell him.
I'm sure
he's listening on his bicycle right now.
He wasn't on a bicycle.
Oh,
he just had it attached to the back of his car. As he had one headlight.
Okay, so maybe he's listening. I don't know.
I don't know. Well, if he is, I hope you got there safely, but don't be an idiot.
Well, look, the good news is we're here to lift those people's spirits that are out there downtrodden because of the rain, and that's the beauty of this show.
Or make them laugh or mad.
Sitting here and uplift on the way to work. Hopefully we can do that with some answers today.
Well, you know, you've got questions. Mike has answers.
That's not quite the case, but I'm ready for the rain to end. I told y'all yesterday that I messed up, didn't do my yard work on Monday. Yesterday there was no slot to be able to do that, and it's not going to happen today either, it looks like. So I'm staring at a Thanksgiving trip, where it might not be done.
Well, hire somebody.
It's not going to happen Monday because we'll be golfing.
Yeah, don't forget that. Don't forget brown grass. Shout out, Red Bobber's going to come back and be a part of it this year again.
Oh, nice. Nice, man. Good
told people. You guys, Finley Roofing, Whataburger, all kinds of companies, that I'm blanking on, Twin Peaks.
There you go.
So, you guys will be out there with us, Pets for Vets. You guys know the calls. But you made it safely, Tiff. That's all that matters.
That's what matters, and hopefully everybody out there listening is able to do that as well, man.
This hour brought to you by Morgan & Morgan Injury at Hire Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm. All right, the college football playoff rankings dropped last night, the latest edition, and I'll give you the top 12. It's Oregon at 1, Ohio State 2, Texas 3, Penn State 4, Indiana at 5, 6 is Notre Dame, 7 Alabama, 8 Miami, 9 Ole Miss, 10 Georgia, 11 Tennessee, and 12 Boise State. And by the way, Boise State is projected to be the number 4 seed.
That's the interesting part of this, right? And we talked about that yesterday a little bit with some of the non-Power 4 conference champions and their path through the field and what the rankings might be. And I don't know, there wasn't many surprises, but I think the posturing amongst some of the votes here is interesting to me. And a lot of people don't realize it, but man, there's always a lot of this when you look on the back end and you start looking at what direction the committee might go. And That starts with me with Texas A&M at 15, and then you move back to South Carolina at 18, and then Missouri for literally no reason at 23. And I'm like looking at that going, okay.
Well, right. Hold on a second now. Doesn't that confuse you that there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 SEC teams in the top 20, yet it's Oregon, Ohio State, Penn State, Indiana is your top five other than Texas sandwiched in there? And I what I'm saying is the fact that Notre Dame would my question is, how are these teams with amazingly weak schedules ahead of all of these SEC teams with two losses? Because Miami, I don't believe, has beat a team in the top 25 all year. In fact, they haven't.
No, they definitely haven't.
And then you would look at Indiana, and who is the top 25 team they've beaten? Because
we talked about it yesterday,
good
man.
Question.
It'd be underdogs to seven SEC teams right now.
Yeah.
But here's the thing about Indiana.
Penn State's not beat one either.
We'll at least get the opportunity this weekend to find out about Indiana. Like, Indiana's going to be held to their feet to the fire, and I think if Indiana loses by double digits, that they're going to tumble out of the 12. I truly believe that.
You believe
that? If
Indiana
loses by 10 or more points to Ohio State, I think they'll tumble out.
So Notre Dame has, what, one win in the top 25 currently?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was Texas A&M.
Yeah, which is no longer where are they?
They're 15.
Are 15.
Yeah. No, that was my point of bringing up A&M and South Carolina and Missouri, because I think there's a lot, and this is coming as a Bama guy, and I think that there's definitely, you know, Ole Miss, Tennessee, Georgia fans that are probably thinking this way as well. I think that when you look at the back end, you see the fact that Missouri, for no reason, was attached to this poll. I think that that's posturing to say that we're going to try to squeeze in maybe a cup. We're going to make that SEC, for the SEC teams, we're going to make their schedule look a little bit more difficult.
Yeah.
Because Missouri's done. I mean, let's be honest, dude. Missouri's done next to nothing.
No, I don't think Missouri deserves to be there.
No, I don't either. But to me, that's posturing from the committee saying, you know what, we're going to make this look a better. Once we do make somebody mad, we're going to try to make it look a little bit better than it is.
It adds to that fact that if Indiana loses that game closely, they could still make the Big Ten title game.
Well, what's going to be frustrating is if do they still have a path? They still have a path to Big Ten title game if they lose that game close.
Yeah, well, let's be honest, with Ohio State being where they're at,
right?
But yeah, they do. I mean, if they were to lose that game extremely closely, and then you know, if any way, shape, and form Ohio State was moved down, yes. But I mean,
won't. I don't know the Big Ten tiebreakers as well as I do the SEC.
And I was told that there was a chance that Ohio State could beat Indiana, and Indiana could, and this was someone that knows the tiebreakers, that could be back in. I don't see it happening with these rankings being the way they do. But yeah, I mean, Penn State could still make it. Oregon is locked in.
They're I was going to say it's projected one seed,
which
perfect still on the season.
But it's so weird is Oregon gets announced last night at like 4 o'clock, or yesterday afternoon, like 4 o'clock. They say, "Hey, just so you guys know, Oregon is locked in a Big Ten title game."
Oh, great!
But it wasn't announced. It was never announced at any point that they even had a potential clinch. Nothing, but they're locked in. They're 11-0. They're locked in a big. They only have one more game.
I feel like you would assume that anyway, without there being some sort of.
Well, you would assume it, but normally there's a whole hoopla about it on whatever broadcast is happening, or you know, the College Game Day. Oregon, with a win today, Herbie, Oregon will be locked in, you know, because they played Wisconsin, and you would think that. There'd have been something on the broadcast, because it was on, I think, NBC, or Game Day. Well, the win today, Oregon will be locked into the Big Ten title game. Nope, nothing. But they are. They're locked in.
Is Oregon, well, who do they play this week?
They're on the bye week.
Yeah, that's crazy to me that they're on a bye week right now.
Yeah, well, there are a couple of teams that have these late byes. I don't know.
It has to be something with the shuffling with opponents from what would have been the Pac-12 schedule.
If Georgia, it could be. They play Washington to close the season. But I mean, their other bye was in September.
That's crazy.
So
it's weird.
But you look at, let's just look at where this affects this part of the world and the SEC. Georgia wins out, regardless of SEC title game or not, they are in the college football playoff.
Yeah, they are.
Do you want to look at the projected matchups? Is that what you're about to do?
Dennis, yeah, second, I was just going to say that I talk about where the SEC is. I think that if Alabama, Ole Miss, and Georgia all went out, I think they're locked in. Tennessee, to me, would be the one, based on that could get left out.
So when you look at the projected first-round matchups, it would be Georgia, 11th-ranked Georgia, or 11th-seeded Georgia, at 6, Penn State. You had 12th-seed BYU, at 5-seed Ohio State, 10-seed Ole Miss, at 7-seed Indiana, and 9-seed Alabama, at 8-seed Notre Dame. Again, projected first-round matchups.
As a Bama guy, I don't mind that. I'd take Notre Dame. What did you just say for Georgia?
Georgia would beat Penn State at Penn State.
That would be Mike Conte'd have a nice round on that one.
That'd
right?
be a cool atmosphere.
I think a lot of these would. You know, and one of the frustrations for this is, you know, Boise State projected 4-seed. Boise State has no path to host a home game, which I think would be really cool on the Smurf turf out there. And Tiff, you've been out to Boise and seen that atmosphere, and I'm sure it's pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, they this season, and then again getting Jenty and getting the Heisman CD, like, it's basically just Broncos mania out there for how they've played this season.
Yeah, so.
Imagine this. Ohio State, in the projections in the games, would be the 5-seed. They'd get to play BYU at home in Columbus, and then they would go on the road to play Boise State. I mean, that's pretty much – I'm not trying to demean teams, but on paper, Ohio State should win both of those matchups easily, and not
Ohio State on paper will be three. There'll be three score favorites in those games.
And then you look at the Georgia route to the semis. They'd have to play at Penn State and at Miami. That's a much tougher route to make to the playoff. For a team that has played the hardest schedule in the country, you tell me. Now, look, I'm not going to sit here and make the argument about what's fair and what's not, but you tell me that's fair.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough for sure.
I mean, what's the point of playing a tough schedule? Because you know what, even the college football playoff is not. Now you got one more loss in Ohio State, but I don't know, man. This doesn't feel right to me.
So what are three things you'd like to see change or improve on the Falcons' defense ahead of their matchup? Actually, they're on a bye week, but what would you like to see them correct during this bye week before they get back at it the following week? So the guys are going to weigh in on that. Improvements, changes, we've got them just ahead on the morning shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Back here.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
On the morning shift, this hour brought to you by Morgan & Morgan Injured. Hire Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm. All right, the Falcons on a bye week, and we had a lot of discussions about what this team needs to take care of during the bye. We heard from Kirk Cousins this week. We also heard from Coach Raheem Morris talking a lot about the scheme. But these guys were kind of trying to scheme up, specifically looking at the defense and what can they improve upon and what needs to change ahead of their next game.
Yeah, Tiff, and I think it's easy to look at the Falcons and say, well, Yeah, got to rush the passer. Yeah, got to cover better. Yeah, got to, you know, get off the field on third down. I think those are the easier things. I don't think that's what we want to talk about so much. It's kind of digging into how they can do that, I guess.
Oh, you don't want to be like, well, just win your one-on-ones.
Yeah, win your one-on-one.
You back to the basics.
Hey, here you go. How about this one? Do your job. You know what I mean? Do your job.
Oh, well, that
problem solved.
Yeah.
There's nothing better than tuning in a guy and say, do your job. And it's like, what is that guy's job? Oh, I don't know.
Well okay then. No. The worst, and look, I'm not saying that I've never done this. It's probably happened before. But I think there's too many people right now in the Falcons fan kingdom that are trying to oversimplify this. It's a Jimmy Lake problem. It's a Kirk Cousins problem. It's a Matthew Judon problem. It's all their freaking problem.
You mean the old scheme versus talent
argument? No, I mean oversimplify it. Well, if you wouldn't have done this, you could have done this. If they, you know, if they get rid of the whole thing about Jimmy Lake, and I know that we're going to talk about it, is, and I told you this morning, it's oversimplifying it to say that Jimmy Lake needs to be fired or Jimmy Lake needs to change his scheme. Raheem Morris is a defensive guy. He hired Jimmy Lake because Jimmy Lake knows his system. Like Raheem Morris is signing off on everything that Jimmy Lake is doing.
Well, yeah, I believe that Raheem's in. Do you think Raheem's in those meetings?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're in lockstep.
I do as well. And look, this kind of leads me into my first or one of my things that I think, and that's the conversation that we're going to have is how they do a better job and how they fix this. But everything about this scheme and what's happening with pass rush and not is predicated on situations, right? So, in other words, this team is, I don't want to say historically, but this team is pretty bad on first down on defense. And what I'm saying is like, when you run against this defense, you're averaging just a shade under 5 yards a carry. 5 yards a carry.
Yes.
So, if you're averaging 5 yards a carry on first down against this defense, that means there's a lot of second and mediums, which turn into what? Third and shorts normally.
Well, I was going to say what they turn into, for a lot of teams, what they turn into is explosives, because you know that you can probably go get that yardage, you know what I mean? If you can take a shot, like if you're third and, I mean, if you're second and three, right, and you've gained 7 yards on first down, you're going to take shots. You're going to take shots.
And then
take risks.
You know what else? You know, and that those are first downs from 6 to 10 yard range, which means, you know, not like a first and five penalty or whatever, like if the defense jumps off. But then in the passing defense on first down, they're averaging almost 8.5 yards a down giving up. Now, that is also, and they've also given up 47 first downs. So this team is really bad on first down. And what my point in all of this is that teams are having such success that it takes them two downs to get another first down, and it's not hard. It also leads to second and third and shorts, and you're just not going to generate pass rush on second and third and shorts. I mean, you're just not. You're not going to. Those aren't necessarily passing situations.
Yeah, they're definitely not. And I think that leads into the further conversation. And I want to give credit. I noticed this, but I want to give credit to Mark Zeno because he tweeted it out yesterday. But I noticed this, you know, Sunday, I think, when I was looking at some numbers. The Falcons are bad in a lot of statistical categories. They're dead last in the NFL in two. That's sack percentage, and it's 2.5. That's what their sack percentage is. And if you look this past weekend, they didn't get a pressure until inside the two-minute warning in the first half. And I believe it was their only pressure from their starting four the entire day. All right, and then you go back to that, and you try to marry these numbers up, right? And I think that's what you're trying to do. You go back to opponent's completion percentage. This is what Zeno tweeted out yesterday. Dead last in opponent completion percentage at almost 72%. So that's your opponent is not being affected at the quarterback position right now. And it doesn't matter how you want to slice it up or how you want to say what should change. They are simply dropping back, taking easy throws, and getting chunk yardage on first and second down. And then completing the third downs.
But you're giving them easy throws. I mean, you go back and watch all of these games, And the one consistent is that quarterbacks who are a young and coach well, which I think Bo Nix is one that falls in that category,
sure.
or B, a savvy veteran that understands what it means to take what, after you watch this team on film, that, hey, if I just take what they're giving me, we'll move the ball and possess it. This is my biggest issue with everything, is that you're so bad in the run defense and you're playing so far off in the pass defense that you're not even getting in – you're getting in very few traditional pin your ears back and go after the quarterback situations.
So my question is, if you take away the last two games, then what does it at least say about this team that despite the issues you guys are pointing out, that they've still been able to win games?
Well, I think it's through relying on the offense, right? I think when you look at – let's just take the Tampa game in Mercedes-Benz. What was that, week four? The game where you win on the, you know, in overtime – you kick the field goal, you spike it with 1 second left, and by the way, ding, you were a referee's hand away from losing that game. But I think when you look at that scenario, you relied on Kirk Cousins to throw for 500 because Baker Mayfield was picking you apart, right? And a lot of times, Tiff, in my opinion, when you run a defense like this, you are counting on turnovers, right? And you're counting on your offense outscoring, and basically you're playing between you're playing not between the 20s. You're playing for the red zone. To shrink the field so that your bumpers off of these wide receivers get shrunk down. The problem, and I'll push back a little bit, Bo, the problem with what you're saying about hugging up on receivers, and I agree with you to an extent, but I think it has to be I think you have to mix it up, because if you're going to hug up, you're going to see some of the rub routes, and with your pass rush being so abysmally bad, when you start seeing rub routes, wheel routes, combinations down the field, you're not going to be able to cover those guys deep if the quarterback's not getting touched for 5 seconds.
Well, that's a very good point, but here's the reality. Those are low percentage throws down the field.
Sure.
Okay?
Yep.
So when, you know, 70-something percent is the completion rate against us, that's because everything is 7 yards or closer, essentially.
Yep.
And so I'm willing to take my chances with maybe – somebody falling into the sack, or maybe moving the quarterback off his spot after so long, or making him move up in the pocket, and maybe Grady or Onyemata or Street or somebody kind of stonewalls their guy, and so you can't move in the pocket as well.
Yeah.
And having the quarterback throw downfield in a low percentage throw, much more than a dump off or just a quick out or whatever, than that, because now at least they're the percentages against me, but the reality is you're allowing yourself to get paper cut down the field for the tune at a 15-play, 7-minute drive, and now you're losing possessions when you do that, because that's shortening the game, and it's also putting extreme pressure on your offense that when they do possess the ball, that they score. And it's not realistic, because what teams are doing now is I think my biggest issue is I'm watching teams adjust to how we play, and I don't see us adjusting to that.
Well, and I think, and one of my three things that I brought to the table for this entire discussion was, we have to do a better job disguising and mixing up. It's frustrating when we're just two guys that sit at a desk with a microphone, can almost look at it and know exactly what we're about to run defensively. There's no disguise to it. The only disguise we utilize is when you get in some of these passing downs that you walk up a Caden Ellis or Nate Lamb in an A-gap or on the edge, and then they bail or they run a twist on. Like, the coverage in the back end's not disguised very well. And it's a simple safety rotation, and you're going into cover three with the pattern matching underneath. It is not hard for Sean Payton to go in and pick apart a defense like that. It's just not. Like, the guy's seen a million different defenses. And while Bo Nix might be a rookie, the guy in his ear is definitely not. And I think that's the outcome we saw on Sunday, is that there is no change up when it comes to these coverages and the things they're trying to do.
And the problem is when you lose guys like you have, because there's no doubt injuries is one of the reasons we were winning games earlier is we were healthy. And we had our best players on the field, and they're able to do the things that you want them to do. They're able to come up and make the sure tackle, right? They're instinctually better. They're better players. Part of what makes them better players, not necessarily athletic size or speed or skill, it's the instinctual
willingness
play.
Is what it
like,
is.
And so when you got a guy that has less playing time, he's not as instinctual, he's not as experienced, then playing like this and not even adjusting, it takes away. You look worse. And some of these guys have made plays. Mike Hughes has made plays because he's a veteran. He knows what's coming. And when you take that away, it hurts you even more. And I think that's what we saw, to me, Sunday in Denver.
I was just Googling instinction because I wanted to
make sure. You know, words are hard sometimes for me. I do the best I can with what my limited capacity.
All right, when we come back here, what does the latest college football playoff rankings mean for some teams this weekend? Implications? Big implications for some of these teams, just like big words. We'll be right back here on The Morning Shift on Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game. The latest college football playoff rankings dropped last night. I'll run through them for you. Through the top 12, you have 1 Oregon, 2 Ohio State, 3 Texas, 4 Penn State, 5 Indiana, 6 Notre Dame, 7 Alabama, 8 Miami, 9 Ole Miss, 10 Georgia, Tennessee at 11, and Boise State at 12.
Mm. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you had a question.
Did I end the inflection?
Okay. Yeah. Sorry.
I was going to make your instinction wrong.
Yeah, my instinction was wrong. No, you know what's funny, and I'll ask you guys this: is there a path? I've been seeing a lot of these questions pop up in the old social timeline. Is there a path for Georgia to host in round one? Is there a path for that? Because that's what I've been trying to, you know, it's like the old GIF with the algorithms going around your head and you're looking at it going, okay, how could that happen? Been trying to break it down.
Do you mean after this weekend? Because the projections don't have them hosting. The projection, at least, for the
matches. No, I mean in the end. Because, look, right now Bama's hosting. Bama can't host a playoff game. It's impossible. Like, Bama either has to win out and they'd be the SEC champion, or they lose and they're probably out of the playoff.
Based on the projection, because what would happen is BYU being a conference champion would jump up, right?
Yeah.
They would jump from what are they, 14. They would jump from 14 to 12, right? So in order for that to happen, Notre Dame would need to lose because Georgia would need to win out. And Indiana would need to lose as well, right?
Right.
Because the teams ahead of Georgia are Ole Miss, Notre Dame. Now, even then, Ole Miss would then host a home game. So I'm thinking maybe,
most of the things.
Ohio State could, if Ohio State loses again too. Now that, see, here's the conundrum for me. Is if Ohio State loses again, they could also bump down. So Georgia could perceivably move up maybe to 8, right?
Right.
And not go. If they don't go to the SEC title game, they could be kind of locked in at 8 and they could host a home game. What does the committee do with Ohio State if they lose in the Big 10 title game, to Oregon again?
So, and that's a good question, but coming up at least, Indiana this weekend. And then on Saturday, on the 30th, they get Michigan.
Yeah, I honestly don't think they'll have a problem with either one of those teams. Michigan is a shell of what they've been.
I was just thinking, because of the rivalry and the history between those two teams.
I agree.
That
I feel
you never know what can happen.
It's a good point.
It's a great point because I think everybody sitting here understands rivalry games. You never know. Like, Florida's going to be favored over Florida State. You never know.
Yeah, right? Well, that one, yeah.
Alabama will be favored over Auburn. Yeah, never know.
This Michigan team, though, I think they're good enough defensively to keep it close. But Ohio State, Ryan Day should be fired on the spot if they lose that game. I'm just going to go ahead and say it. You can't have a $20 million team.
That's tough.
No. You can't, you can't go say, I need $20 million for players,
and lose your rival. This is the game. It's like the game for Ohio State, right? And it's kind of always been the monkey on the back, so to speak, for Ohio State. So if you come out and you lose, I am never lobbying for anyone to get fired, just to put that out there. But I am saying if you come out and lose to this state,
you're
of a Michigan team,
might be a little more understandable.
It might, you know.
My issue with what you're, with what both of y'all are saying is that if your only two losses are to your rival and the number one team in the country, I would have a hard.
Let me put it this way.
I don't think he would be let go, but I'm just saying it.
I do.
Wouldn't sit well considering the state that this Michigan program is currently in.
You have a guy who there's a lot of the fan base, including some of the money guys, aren't happy with. He stands up at a podium and says, in order for us to win a national title and to beat Michigan, we need around $20 million for an NIL, for NIL money.
Hold on. Coming up with the scenario in your head.
No, that's what happened.
How do you know it wasn't the flip side? You know what I mean? Like
Mike, stop. Right. I'm not a fire the coach guy. You know that about me. This guy stood up there after losing the fourth straight year to Michigan and said, we need $20 million to be serious as a title contender in the new college football. He gets the money, they go get a bunch of players, and then you're telling me you lose at home to a 5-5 Michigan at maybe a 5-6 team at the time, Michigan team?
Right.
Dude, there is no coming back from that for Ryan Day. I'm sorry. That's the reality of the situation.
I'm getting vibes of Mark Zeno sitting in here during the World Series and telling me the Yankees need to fire Aaron Boone.
That's completely different.
That's what it feels like.
It's completely different.
It's like, dude, you're playing in the World Series. You're the number two ranked team in the country right now. Well, the only person you've lost to is Oregon. And you're telling me they lose one more game to the right team, he's done?
It's the wrong team.
Well, the right team in this scenario.
No, it's the wrong team. That would be what is fifth straight loss. All right, you know what? You don't believe me?
I'm not saying it won't happen. No. I'm saying it's wrong if it does.
John Cooper was literally fired for almost the exact same thing, just a different era of college football.
I think it's wrong that it happened back then, too.
Really? Because it got him a national title 2 years later.
I think it's ridiculous.
It got him a national title 2 years later.
Who do you think you're going to bring in at Ohio State that's going to be some whisperer?
I'm telling you something. You would have Ohio State's one of the jobs. It's not Ole Miss, guys. It's a job that if you fire the coach, there is about 99% of the head coaches in college football today will line up to do.
I just think there has to be more value placed on consistency.
I disagree.
Agree with you, but I'm saying that program, and I've covered them on three different occasions. There is a lot of pressure, and I'm not saying it's any more pressure.
I understand, there is.
There's a lot of pressure. On the head coach of that team.
I understand that there is. I'm saying it
shouldn't be. That's my point.
Don't mistake the reality, which is what I'm putting out, as for what I think the way it should be. I do believe in consistency. I would kill to go 10-2 every year at Florida right now, or at Kennesaw State, either one.
I was going to.
In D1.
It drives me nuts. It drives me nuts.
Tiff's right. The reality of that is that what that is there.
Here's the end game of what we're all talking about is I agree with both of you. I just think it's wrong. And I think we're all arriving at the same spot. There needs to be more value placed on consistency at these programs because guess what? You move on from a guy, and there's a couple of case studies about this. All of a sudden, you move on from a guy, and all of a sudden, you move some pieces around. Now, it's NIL era, and it's different. But then all of a sudden, you wind up scratching and clawing, and this is not a shot, but at a place like Florida, where they've gone through, four head coaches since Urban Meyer? And now it's like, dude, when can we get back to the place we were back when that was happening? Not that they fired Urban Meyer, but my point being is that you
this
can find yourself
coach,
in that downward tailspin in a hurry.
And I go back to the talent they had. Like, I had that Rose Bowl game where they beat Utah, but you had C.J. Stroud as your quarterback. You had Jackson Smith and Jigba, one of your great receivers. You also had Marvin Harrison Jr., who was on the
stud
coming up the ranks at that time. But you had a wealth of talent, and you were in the Rose Bowl. You weren't playing for the national championship. So, I don't know. But those are just my two cents on just
I agree
the,
with you.
You know, when you look back at the caliber player this program has had. When we come back here on the morning shift, improvements, changes to the Falcons' defense, that we will weigh in on what needs to happen over the bye. Stay with us here. This hour brought to you by Morgan & Morgan Injured. Hire Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm. We'll be right back here on the morning shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.